goes back to the work of Einar and Arantén, like about 10 years ago. They invented some strange recursive relations. People have been able to solve many interesting problems, computational problems, using this formalism. The origin of the formulas some kind of unclear. So that was the reason why we decided with Maxime, after many unsuccessful attempts, to understand what's going on. And it turns out that there is a structure behind of all these strange formulas, which has nothing to do with kind of a original structure proposed by Einar and Arantén. So, what they had in mind, that one starts with some geometric data, something which they call spectral curve. It's very rough. I mean, it's not a definition. It's something. Some initial data. Actually, let me call all this initial data. And this is a differential one form on the spectral curve. And this is sort of a two differential. It's not a differential two form because it's symmetric. It's something like typical example, this expression where there is no wedge. It's a symmetric differential. And then there is this very strange infinite system of recursive relations, which is now called topological recursion, which produces a collection of meromorphic. You see, it's meromorphic, it has pole. Meromorphic and differentials. And it turns out it's not obvious from the construction, from the system of recursive relations, but it turns out that they are a symmetric with respect to the permutations, arbitrary permutations of these ZIs, like this. Hmm. All right. So,
can I ask a question? You told us that the N has to do with...
I don't tell you anything. It's just sort of a snapshot of some paper, some paper of Einar and Arantén. I'm not going to give a talk in topological recursion. I told you that I will give a talk about the N between the first part and the second part in the title of my talk. So then I'm not going to comment on it. If you want, I can.
G, I just want to know what G labels.
What?
Because you have two labels, G and N, and I have
G. G and N are. G and N are non-negative integers. All right. Good. All right. So if this was a I can answer this question. All right. Sometimes. It's possible to find a collection of meromorphic functions such that if you sort of, if you like, antiderivatives in some sense, and this FGN, they have their own meaning. I mean, for people who believe that the notation should be fixed forever, so they know what FGN should mean. All right. But anyway, so that's what something which goes back to NR and Rn10, and it's not what I'm going to talk about. So it turns out that this mysterious topological recursion, this system of equations, which I'm not even write down, it's some recursive relations between this MG, omega gen, which help to compute them by induction from the initial data, they have nothing to do with geometry. So the spectral curve and these meromorphic differentials, it's some objects which appear when we try to apply kind of a more general formalism, more general structure, which we call this Maxim area structure. There is no spectral curve, just forget about it. Okay, should I put quotation mark? I mean, it's what they call spectral curve. No, it's not just Riemann surface. Okay, I suggest, I mean, for those who are interested in the NR and Rn10 original paper, so you can read it. All right, so I'm not going to repeat what they did because I believe we can do it better. So what's this area structure? It's a pure algebraic object. And since it's pure algebraic, so let's fix the field. Say of characteristic zero. It can be a complex numbers, but not necessary. So, and let V be, say, n-dimensional vector space. So at the beginning, I will assume that it's finite dimensional, but in fact, it's not necessary. And then it can be infinite dimensional. All right. Now, let's choose coordinates, maybe function. Let's choose, we can choose some basis here, finite dimensional. So let's choose coordinates on V star. And this will be the cotangent bundle, which is, of course, a vector space. So we can choose dual coordinates. So then all together, these are coordinates on this vector space. So then, of course, as a cotangent bundle, it has standard symplectic structure with only non-trivial Poisson bracket written here. And now the definition. So there will be two things. There will be classical area structure and there will be quantum area structure. The meaning of the word area will be clear much later when we indeed try to compare it with something which was known before. So classical area structure. On V, on this vector space, is given by a collection of, let's call them quadratic, although they will have also linear term, quadratic polynomials, Hamiltonians, if you like. Hi, will be n of them, given quite explicitly. also quadratic polynomials which depend on three tensors, if you like. And the condition is that if I take a vector space over K generated by this no more than quadratic function, then this is a Lie subalgebra. In the Lie algebra of no more than quadratic functions in my simple
vector space. So you said Fijk.
Yeah. All right. So then this is a definition. So
this. It's
Poisson bracket because it's just a classical story. You have no more than quadratic functions on a vector space. Then they form a Lie algebra, of course. And the requirement is that if I consider this n Hamiltonians, they form a Lie subalgebra. So I will talk a little bit about this definition. Maybe some questions, if they are not immediate, wait for a while. Oh, okay. So I will continue. You interrupt me if you do not like them. So anyway, what is clear from this that we have. Three type of tensors. In this story, one is a tensor A. Another is a tensor B, which can be. Kind of, it looks as a multiplication somewhere, at least it looks as a bilinear operation. We have another tensor C. And the condition means that A and C are symmetric actually, it's the other way around, I believe. Yeah, I mixed it. Sorry. I think I mixed. Yeah, C is a multiplication and V is a co-multiplication. Sorry. So they are symmetric with respect to the permutations of G and K. All right. Now, so we have an Lie. Yeah, of course, it's a Lie subalgebra.
The requirement is called a Lie subalgebra to some extent based on the A's.
Yes, yeah, this is true. The fact that it's a Lie subalgebra, it's isomorphic to. It's easy to see that it's isomorphic as a vector space to V dual. Yeah. Now, the fact that it's a Lie subalgebra, it imposes some constraints on ABC. So these are quadratic constraints. Yeah, And actually, the fact that there are no linear terms with respect to x, it implies that A is totally symmetric. And this is important for us because, as I mentioned, that whatever this Einar-Renten formalism meant, their meromorphic forms, they had to prove, it's not an easy proof, that they are symmetric. And when we match this story with some other story, then we'll get for free some symmetry.
From this thing that you want to
Cartan subalgebra of what? No, of course not, because it's not pure quadratic. You have linear term.
Wait, if I look just at the quadratic part,
then it's something else.
That doesn't have to be a subalgebra.
SP is, if you take just the pure quadratic part here, then this is SP. It's not to talk about. Yeah.
Something about extensions.
It can be thought of as extensions. Yeah. Yeah, you can think of it as extension, but as you will see, this is the wrong way to treat. All right, so it's totally symmetric. So this K has nothing to do with the ground field. Sorry. So, of course, you can compute structure constants. So, I don't know should I write. Let me write Poisson brackets instead of Li. And these think something like 2. It's Q symmetrization of the tensor of the tensor B. I don't know. I'm not sure that there are many people in the room who are interested in this quadratic stuff, but the quadratic constraints, which come from the fact that we have Lie algebra, they mean mathematically, they mean that V is an algebra over a certain prop. Prop means that there are many inputs and many outputs. So that's, so one can expect some abstract moduli space of Riemann surfaces with the boundaries, but which are not relevant to the curves which appear in geometric applications. Okay. We did not study that prop, but what I know that there is a bunch of people. Sort of now becoming an industry, people working in topological recursions. And so I spoke to Anderson and his collaborators, like Chekhov, and they somehow, by studying dynamics of Young diagrams, they invented some formal relations between tensors, which are very much similar, maybe coincide. And so that's probably another example of kind of realization. Stop. but no Riemann surfaces, pure algebra. All right, maybe one more geometric way to think about this classical area structure. So, like sort of a coordinate free. So this is a symplectic affine space. It's, in our case, it's a vector, but let's just vector space. But let's just assume that we have a symplectic affine space of dimension 2n. And in our case, we have a Lie algebra. But suppose we have an n-dimensional Lie algebra acting on M in a Hamiltonian way. And so then we have a moment map. And what we see in this example, we are in this setup, we see that the moment map is given by the collection of Hamiltonians, which are no more than quadratic. So then in general, if we do not have this splitting, we have just symplectic affine space, Lie algebra of the dimension 1/2 acting in a Hamiltonian way, and assume that the moment map is at most quadratic, which we can say because everything is sort of a vector space or almost a vector space. And so let's take a smooth point. So then there is a component of this algebraic variety passing through this smooth point. And in fact, if this point is regular, which is our case, then we have a coisotropic subvariety of dimension, well, no more than n, but in fact it's equal to n because Lie algebra is dimension n. So we have a Lagrangian subvariety with double. So then the whole story is about Lagrangian subvarieties in the affine symplectic spaces, which are defined by quadratic equation. So then sort of one lesson. Now, how this structure appears in this abstract setup. So if we have this affine M, we have L, we have the point, then of course, we have invariantly defined tangent space to L, which I denote by V star. But then I can take any Lagrangian complement. There is a choice of this. And so any such choice defines me a classical area structure. So that's a geometry. We should have a Lagrangian subvariety, and then there are a bunch of these. If we change this complement, we have another area structure. So this depends only on three tensors. If this depends on some other three tensors, and so there is a gauge transformation from one to another one. So then,
so
the right.
Then factoring you just focusing on, even if L is not quadratic.
If L is not quadratic, it doesn't work. Because if you have a Lagrangian subvariety, if you look just for functions which are equal to zero, so then they do not form, I mean, you have a Poisson ideal in your algebra, but I want more. I want to have a Lie algebra. Yeah, so that's sort of a, it's more. Okay. So then, yeah, so then again, so then there is a gauge transformation on this ABC. Some other, so then it's sort of a complex.
What? So these
gauge
transformations are defining
x's
by multiples of y.
I can write down formulas. Just change, it's not x's, it's about ABC.
Yeah.
So you just recalculate this ABC.
Explicit.
Yes, if I choose a different polarization. And this is an application that's responsible for the holomorphic anomaly equation. There is actually one more thing which I can do here. I can change a smooth point. Yeah. But the story is like in finite dimensional, it's exactly, finite dimensions, it's exactly true. In infinite dimensions, it's morally true. That there is a group corresponding to this Lie algebra. Yeah? The Lie algebra is n-dimensional. Lagrangian submanifold is also n-dimensional. So this section is transitive. So then there is some group or in infinite dimensions like Lie algebra, which kind of acts along L. So L is a torsor or one orbit. So next thing is, of course, to quantize the story. And I mean, it's kind of, if you're a mathematician, or I don't know who, like, know something about deformation quantization or some other purely mathematical stuff, you have a Lagrangian subvariety in the symplectic affine vector space. So it have symplectic affine space, you have a Weyl algebra, so everything is pretty down to earth. So then there should be a quantum module for this Weyl algebra corresponding to this Lagrangian, and if you're lucky, it should be cyclic, it should have highest vector, so wave function. So the question is how to write down formula for that wave function, that's what's going on. So it's in the pretty mathematically and not physically pretty basic elementary stuff. But this is what stays behind this topological recursion.
So you're saying the expressions that you achieve with OGM, they're just
the wave function? What I'm saying that what they call omega GN, it's just a coefficient, yeah, it's just something which coefficients which appear in the wave function. That's it. So then, should I stop now? Yeah, because I mean, because there are possibilities. I can tell you what's a quantum area structure. I mean, there are two things. I don't know. It depends on what. Of what do you want and how far you can see. So if you look this vector space, so it is generated by well, some central part, linear functions, I don't know, quadratic functions. So that's the Lie algebra in Placet. So then we can kind of try to quantize it by introducing another central variable and replacing one half of the coordinates by derivatives. So I don't know. Let me do like this. This is an algebra generated by these symbols with clear relations. Let me not write them down. So then inside we have kind of a H deformation of this story. Just replace each of these by HDI. Okay, so let's not repeat it. So modulo H reproduce what we have. And so then just quantization of classical area structure. So is a monomorphism. Whatever we have before of the same Lie algebra. To this Lie algebra, and here the bracket is what is expected. So monomorphism such that modulo H, it's what we have, is equal what we have. Yep.
To me, you'll keep exactly the same fashion constant.
I'll tell you in a second. I mean, it looks as sort of very elementary things, but it's getting more and more interesting as we proceed. So, first of all, let's write down quantum Hamiltonians. Well, up to some point it is just replacement. Plus something new. It's a central element. Yeah, epsilon I here, some constants. So it's a collection of constants. which of course we can treat as another tensor, just another element. And again, the condition that this form Lie algebra, so they add some additional constraint. It's all the same constraints on ABC, but there is also an additional constraint on epsilon. Now, the question, reasonable question is if we have a classical area structure, whether we can quantize it. So if the dimension of V is finite, then there is an explicit formula and actually if you write down constraints on these tensors you will see that this the choice of epsilon is defined uniquely up to any character of the Lie algebra. Now, from this formula, it's also clear that it doesn't work in infinite dimensions because we have a trace here. Yeah? Uses trace. So in infinite dimensions, it's a new piece of data. And cannot be avoided. And in fact, if you look a little bit carefully, you will see that if you fix the splitting, then on this, you will have what is known as a Japanese cocycle. And so then epsilon gives a trivialization of this Japanese cocycle to cocycle being restricted to your Lie algebra. So in infinite dimension, so that becomes a problem. And now having all that, we want to quantize this quadratic Lagrangian and get it. Obtain an explicit formula for the wave function. So then it's sort of a wave function, and let me call it abstract topological recursion.
Well?
No.
Why? That seems general.
Because it's a quantization. It's a quantization of the structure which you had. That's it.
Well, that's right. But they get out H-bar correct terms.
You can do whatever you want, but.
That's no, it. What you're saying just seems a bit funny from the usual version of what means to quantize. It's normally I'm free to do anything I want.
Okay. You see, okay, maybe I should say, well, okay, I can say several things, I mean, just comment. Well, let me maybe postpone it until later because I expect that I will not have time to say everything that I want. Let me think. All right. So anyway, let me say one comment. So I think that what you suggest will be gauge equivalent to what I'm saying. Yeah, so then there is a change of, there is a quantization of this gauge transformation. All right, now we want to consider this kind of expressions such that each of these is in turn an infinite series, and each of these actually, yeah. All right. So, and we want, of course, to study these equations. So, should I comment somehow on that or not? Because physicists, there is no question how to understand this, but for mathematicians, of course, it's not clear because this is sort of prohibited symbol in deformation quantization. There is nothing which is exponent of something divided by h. But the equations are fine. Good. Yeah. Okay, good. So then let me just state the result. Theorem. This theorem is true in the kind of in the more general conditions that, but I don't want just to discuss them because it's not just entirely mathematical talk. Suppose we have a quantum area structure. So this in particular severely restricts the class under which this theorem holds. But the theorem holds that, the theorem tells the following, that there is a unique solution of this type such that S0 start with cubic terms and for, so this is G equals 0 and for G bigger than equal than 1 as G starts with at least 1 point and as Gn they are symmetric. In particular, by the way, this means, this notation means that there is nothing in the unstable region. And furthermore, we can look, so these are symmetric tensors, so we can look for if you'd like Taylor coefficients, yeah. So SG would notation SGN, and I can also take. Okay, let me split them. I1, IN-1, and the N indices. So should I explain this? It's just. If you choose the basis, so they are responsible. These are coefficients for this tensor. Okay, I'm going to write down topological recursion. I'm going to write down the relations between these. And this turns out to be just topological recursion. I don't know why they didn't Should I write it?
Sure.
Yes.
Okay, good. All right, so then I will need some space. Okay, so I believe I can erase this because it's, I think you understand the response. All right, so starting to write it down. Take some time. Sorry. Which is, okay, let me just double check. This is not the last summand, there will be one more. All right. This, I believe that this is why very few people are able to read the paper. I mean, you have to work in topological recursion if you want to okay. All right. Okay, good. And there are some probably I should make some comments on the summands, but the structure is clear from what is written here. Yeah. So
what?
There
isn't anything that I would be answered.
No.
Yeah,
it could disappear. Yeah, I mean, at least some notation should be clear. For example, G is equal to G1 plus G2. So the number of points is split into two disjoint subsets.
Do you mean geometric way to understand how you get things that look like surfaces?
So that's the other way around. That's the whole point. There is no geometry. You just do very stupid thing. So topological recursion is about quantization of quadratic Lagrangians.
Yes. Would you think about that some sort of instinctive theory that then open close duality and somehow get there?
Well, so are you asking me as a mathematician? Okay, if it's a mathematical question, then you have a prop of Riemann surfaces with the number of inputs and outputs. So algebra or a prop should give you an open closed string theory, whatever, topological field theory. Yeah. So then you can, I mean, we did not try to make a connection because we are not interested in that. So absolutely.
Like,
But
so there's an abstract path if you give me two dimensions to get E, it's partition function. And it's not going to be the sustain of all space. The reason being, without a number, it's just promotional imagining spend. It's a little strict. But if you analyze what that means, it means it's close to some kind of two dimensional natural process. You know, for the B model, for example, partition function is a quantization of the dimensions of that location. It's like a very
No, but this is Kevin. That's what you say. This is right, but this is a sort of a toy model. I can do it in finite dimension, yeah, and still get the same formulas with kind of which implicitly contains a kind of a way to go to the boundary of the moduli space for absolutely no reason in finite dimension. It can be something like two-dimensional vector.
Yeah,
epsilons do not appear. They either exist or they don't.
And if they don't, then they're like
in finite, okay, so then there should be some comments. In finite dimensions, epsilon always exists. So then there is no question about that. But the formulas which we have here, they are cyclic. So they work in infinite dimension as well. So I can give actually the next. This is the end of the abstract story, and then the list of examples. If I have time, I can start with something very basic, like exponential integral of the quadratic plus cubic polynomial, just pure Feynman rules. And to tell you what will be the area structure. Of course, I mean, one of the sort of guiding lines was this very old story about matrix area function, which also part of that. Yeah, so then you see. Okay, but let's then example. So example one. Everything is finite dimensional. We have a quadratic polynomial, like non-degenerate quadratic form. Let's non-degenerate quadratic form. Then we have arbitrary cubic polynomial in the variables y. And what we consider it's a sort of a, it should be called 1 over h Fourier transform mathematically. Something like this. All right, maybe 1 over h must be 3. Exponential integral, which I understand purely formally. Perturbatively. So in terms of as h goes to zero, so yeah, let's stupidly apply Feynman rules. So then we have a genus extension. Yeah. So these are computed as a sum over trivalent graph, blah, blah, blah. So then this theorem tells that this SGN satisfy this abstract topological recursion formulas. So the corresponding Lie algebra is abelian. Well, of course, and this, so this something just reformulation which everybody knows. So, and this can be obtained. This is cubic. Obtained from this cubic polynomial just by using the inverse to the quadratic form. So, what? Ah, yeah, yeah. The, yes, it's just they are purely cubic. Yeah. All right. So let me write it down. It's minus h di plus some jk. A J K, X J. Excuse me, not cubic but quadratic. It's a, they're just purely quadratic. Only this center is present. Right? Okay, so this is something, so it, which we knew before, which is part of this story. But next is something which is a little bit more interesting. It's a local topological recursion. So it's kind of a more realistic and closer to... by the way, I should say one thing which maybe... right time to say that if okay, maybe it's example. So maybe let me just present it and then I'll. So here, so it's a local topological recursion, if you like. Local in the sense that there will be some geometry, so kind of have more and more geometry. And so my symplectic vector space will be the space of one forms on the formal disk with its trivial region. So the symplectic structure this one, so every closed form is exact. All right, now let's consider, so far it will be the black box, but if you like, later I explain it. Consider the family of constraints. On this, sort of a residue constraints, two type of constraints. Let me write it down, then I explain the notation. Now, what is written here? So every gamma can be written in this way. This is a current. Yep. And then I can introduce the coordinates. X and Y. And impose the two types of residue constraints on the one differential forms, which I write in these coordinates. As I said that these constraints have geometric meaning, deformation theoretical meaning, but I would like just to impose them and to see what's happened. So then constraints A, if I just substitute, so if I just substitute, they will give me vanishing of all odd modes. And the constraint B, so A L not equal to zero, give me something which probably you easily recognize. And so then we have, if we combine them together, there we have a family of Hamiltonians. I don't know, should I write them down? Let me write first two. Right? And this is like minus J2. Then all odd will be a combination of linear and quadratic. And all even will be just this. So then.
So where did this come from?
Oh, just from this A and B. You just.
Why do you use those particular operations?
You just substitute it because your coordinate is written.
Well, you can imagine driving the constraints for the genes. But why is that? So what's the relationship between how those constraints?
No. It's just I combine them together. It's just another way to write down this equation and it's the same.
Yes,
and then this is what I am writing. these are constraints, these are Hamiltonians, because what I, in the definition of the classical area structure, I had a collection of no more than quadratic Hamiltonians. What? Yeah, that's, they are not commuting, they form a Lie subalgebra, as you can expect. It's on half of Virasoro. Yeah, so that's. So the point is, yeah, that in this way we recover half of the Virasoro, what mathematicians call it with algebra, the algebra of vector fields on the line. And what is. The only non-trivial Poisson bracket between the modes is this one. I mean, nothing unexpected, but this something which we knew before, now it's obtained from some other kind of foundation, if you'd like. So then we have this as David pointed in a that this is a vector subspace which is closed with respect to this Lie bracket. So then, okay. So then we can split it into a direct sum of two, where this V these differential forms with a trivial residue. And so then we conclude that there is a classical area structure on this infinite dimensional vector space. And this is, again, these are differential forms on the formal disk with a trivial residue. And now you can imagine the global story. Do I have time for that, or should I stop? Okay, I can stop. And so then kind of leaving the more
interesting. No, those
are all. Okay. It's,
well, if you're going to release parts of the audience.
Yeah, I can. Yeah.
I think parts of the audience
are probably Anyway, so it's a seminar, so it can be informal. So how to think about this story? So in getting closer to the setup of topological recursion. So this is a local story, that's what I mean. But what should be the global story? The global story is a little bit more general than the Einar and Arantin thought. So the framework is like this. So it's a global. So we start with a Poisson surface. Let's work over complex numbers. Okay, then, and let's denote by S, it's open symplectic leap. And assume again, it just for simplicity, I will assume that this is a smooth divisor, but in general, it can be a normal process. All right. And now I want to say to impose some additional. To require some additional data, and this additional data will be a foliation, Lagrangian foliation of P, so with D, such that F, or closure of F, or whatever, F is tangent to D. So, this is a divisor, this is a symplectic leaf, this is a foliation. It's automatically Lagrangian in dimension two, but it's better to stress more general setup. So what's a spectral curve, if you'd like, definition or a description? Definition, so it should be an algebraic curve, complex curve. Okay, that's definition. The definition is called F transversal. Spectral curve if. Well, sigma is smooth compact. And sigma intercept the divisor at finitely many points, sort of the poles, intersection is transverse. And secondly, sigma is tangent the foliation F at finitely many points. Let's call them ramification points and the tangency of order one. Which means that in local coordinates, this curve near the tangency looks like this. I don't know. This is sigma. So it's tangent to the leaf F, where local model is this, and it's transversal to D. So this is some P beta, this is some alpha. And so that's The second part explains the name area, because the corresponding function will be cubic. All right. Now, if you have this, okay, let's first assume that there are no poles. Because one reason is that in R10 they did not consider this more general story, which is really important. Assume that just no poles at all, just ramification points. So then you can imagine that your symplectic leaf coincide with a Poisson surface, and it's something like a cotangent bundle to some curve, which you had from the very beginning, yeah? Like in the framework of, say, Hitchin system. So assume, just to simplify things, that this is an empty set. So then you have something like this. This is a foliation. These are ramification points. And so if you take a small disk about a ramification point and take a completion, we are in the local story. So then we have kind of a finitely many situations like this. Yeah. So
it's not immediately
obvious,
but
no, it is.
Yeah, it is not
a spring. No, it is. Well, what's not? Yeah, you see?
Yes, I guess that's the why.
I don't know, but because you choose local coordinates. If you want to describe the coordinates in entirely intrinsic terms, you should do the following. You should take do not mix it with another. This is a symplectic form on S. I'll explain it. No. The constraints are not clear. Sorry. I misunderstood you. Okay. Let me just two phrases and then I explain. All right. So at least what we can do, we can take sub overall these ramification points of these symplectic vector spaces, yeah, and it's purely formal. It's still symplectic vector space, infinite dimensional. It's sort of a Tate vector space. Now, inside, we can take a subspace I think I should require that they equal to zero in the origin. I'm not sure about this z, but some regular point, regular. Let me actually, maybe let me check whether I need it will be the dual. Yeah, you are right. I don't need it. Because I do not want the pole of order one. Okay. Yeah.
So is DZ an operator?
DZ is here. DZ is here.
No.
It's okay. What I'm saying that if I take the formal disk about every ramification point, I have a coordinate. I can describe it intrinsically, if you'd like, in terms of the symplectic form. and the foliation, and which means that this coordinate z as well as x and y, they have intrinsic meaning about the ramification point. But then I can define this and this. There is no question about it. The global structure appears when I want to define this v, which will be the Lagrangian complement. Right? So that's and then this, the meaning of these constraints, they are the following. Like suppose that I consider the moduli space of deformations of sigma in the class of spectral curves, which means that my spectral curve is some compact with tangency of order one. So again, I forgot about these poles. They do not exist. All right? So if I remove this, then the deformation of a spectral curve, local deformation, it's just one form, neuromorphic one form. But then I need to kind of remember to restore this deformed point. This means that I have a punctured disk which can be filled by an actual disk. Yeah? And this gives me this residue constraints, which I wrote about. These are, if you like, this Jn, they can be thought as coordinates on the moduli space of local deformations of my spectral curve. All right. Now.
But then it takes any forms on the Riemann surface, not forms on the
Riemann
surface without puncture.
No, they are still local. Okay. They are not. They are forms. I deform everything locally. I just take this small piece, I deform it, and then I am in this situation.
Yes.
So I'm just explaining everything in the local.
So the moment there is some amount of this star, I'm not talking to each other.
They do not, absolutely, yeah. I have the disjoint union of these disks,
yes,
over all points, and that's, so the point is that the kind of this topological recursion, they observed it, that it's a local story. Very, very little depends on the global thing.
Are they going to have to talk to each other globally?
That's, they start to talk. So how to define this? All right. If I look for the global deformations of my sigma, they are given by holomorphic one form.
Yes.
So they have this inside of this symplectic vector space. Yeah. Let's take any Lagrangian complement. I don't know. L sigma Lagrangian complement to this. And let's take it pre-image. So since they are not holomorphic, so they are realized by one forms with poles at the ramification point. Okay, so then I will look, I define them as one forms in this W, such that if I take its class, I mean they are Laurent expansions of forms which have class from L sigma.
Maybe it's the well-known, it's some linear
relation, some linear space inside the quality. Yeah, it's a linear, but it's linear. Okay, so this is how the global story. Lagrangian complement, how it can be zero.
Is it
not single
the Lagrangian complement
in the
state
0, 0, 0?
Yeah.
Yeah,
you take
just
the.
Yeah. So L0 like is a plenty homomorphic, it's an easy bar. So I think like it's not
So these are arbitrary of the poles.
No, this is a vector subspace.
Yes.
What do you mean it can be? It can be anything.
It's a vector subspace of the base of all poles.
It's a finite dimensional.
But you've written things in terms of the locally. It's
yeah, yeah, but this is. Yeah, but. Yeah, but this is a kind of a very old story that you can deform the complex structure by.
Of the three balls on a dish. Neighborhood, and then you're at the state that has this, and the inner surface defines a state in the top of the space.
My question is really stupid. Well, the curve.
Yeah, that's what I'm answering, because a change of complex structure is equivalent to allowing poles. This is the whole story how the Virasoro acts on MGM.
Oh, yes, yeah.
Yeah, but that's exactly it.
I'm just going to ask you a question. Is that good? Do you want to ask a question? I was thinking about design
like D-Z bar. No, L-sigma is a finite dimensional vector space in the cohomology. There is no D-Z bar.
But you've written it as a higher dimensional vector subspace of H1, which is
not. No, no, no. It's just the common. Well, it's a finite dimensional vector subspace. I don't understand what.
What's the order of the poles?
The order of the poles can be any. I just look for those elements like. In this vector space, which have classes, I look for one forms which define classes in my vector subspace. What's the problem?
Do you see my computing at all?
No, I understand that you want to have DZ bar, but I'm telling you
that. It's not that I want a DZ bar, it's that DZ bar is written on the blackboard.
Where is DZ bar?
H1 sigma C.
Upper right,
sorry.
I thought that it's a notation for the first cohomology of the curve, which is purely topology.
Well, it can stand like zero, zero.
It can be, but I don't want to think of them in this way.
Well, I take a complement of the thing stand by and then you want to treat them, then you're treating them as holomorphic
ones. Not holomorphic.
But you have,
not holomorphic, meromorphic. Meromorphic.
No, you have
some poles. I think.
I have no poles. I have a subspace in the space of topological one poles.
All right.
And I'm turning them into meromorphic one poles. I don't know how to do that.
Yeah, but it's called forms, I believe, like of second type.
I don't know.
All right, but what should I do?
I give you a cycle, you give me a meromorphic
one. I can tell you how to integrate over any cycle. Will you be happy? Because elements of H1, they are forms which I can integrate, pair with one cycle. I can integrate it. Give me a cycle. I tell you how to integrate, because I have trivial residue at the punctures. So what's?
I'm sorry.
I'm missing something.
All right. So should we take a break?
So we see, help me again. So you have this big W. Are we trying to restrict to something smaller, or are you just building the complement of the dual?
No. I'm building a complement of the dual.
Ah, okay. So the dual was forms, local forms, which were not had no poles.
Maybe I should say it. I don't know whether it will be helpful or not. So this is a finite dimensional. Another point of view. This is a finite dimensional Lagrangian space. All right. This is a finite dimensional symplectic vector. So what I am saying that inside of W. There is a coisotropic subspace called G, coisotropic, such that this is equal to the corresponding symplectic wall.
Okay, so G is given by those things.
By global.
Global, away from the functions.
Yes, with trivial reason.
I certainly use
that. All right. Now, second thing is that there is a Lagrangian subspace in this G such that its image in this quotient is my L sigma.
You mean you just take the inverse image of L sigma?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, but if you just read what I've just said, just the restatement, you agree with
so
that. But G is a part of W, therefore in W I can't find. it's global forms on sigma with trivial residues.
Meromorphic forms.
And
an image in W that has
yeah.
There might be a bit too many.
Yes, a bit too many, exactly.
Because that's only the time of forms.
Yeah, yeah, but
if there were
but modulo infinite dimensional, G is infinite dimensional, G
yes.
Whatever, perp is infinite dimensional, but the quotient is finite dimensional. It's like mathematically
yeah.
It's a known thing, you just use
yeah,
some adelic presentation.
So you just have to take the one form. Now you need the Lagrangian inside H1 sigma C, is it the global?
Yeah, and I take, okay, maybe indeed, that's the way which Kevin suggested, maybe it's better. I take just pre-image of this finite dimensional complement.
I guess it doesn't always mean that this quotient over there is the same as all forms.
No, this is a kind
of,
I don't know, theorem. No, it's quotient, it's not, yeah, it's all cohomology. Yeah, all right, so then this is a story, yeah? So we have an area structure, so and then we can generalize it in many ways. I should say that maybe I think that... Hmm.
And this is supposed to be something like a quantization of B. So
yes, absolutely. Yeah, this B is embedded in the symplectic vector space. Yeah? It's like base of Hitchin system is embedded in the cohomology of the spectral curve. So then just applying general machinery we get the wave function.
That is, well, I thought we were getting a particular function on B.
This is a notation. Psi with index B. It's not a function on B. Yes.
I think the function we're building
machinery
is a function on
B. Yes. It is a function on B. That's cool.
But now you want to be a wave function on this smaller thing.
Well, quantum wave, okay. I can just write, or is it still on the blackboard? Unfortunately.
I mean, this is a function that depends on the lot of variables, right?
Plus blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And all these, whatever coefficients I have, they are symmetric tensors on V.
Okay, so each point in V gives you a function.
Each point of B, maybe it's a misleading. Okay. I don't know how, okay. Problem is that if I write it sigma, it will be also misleading because it will look as a wave function which corresponds to a Lagrangian subvariety sigma sitting in the symplectic leaf. So, it's a different story.
Yes.
I don't know. Anyway, this psi.
It's sitting in space of possible deformations of sigma.
No, I think that B is the right. Because I have a Lagrangian subspace, and basically I'm quantizing it.
So you have a set of equations to define the deformation.
If you'd like, okay. All right. So I have some infinite dimensional story. The finite dimensional is obtained by a Hamiltonian reduction.
And these equations are defining B inside some infinite dimensional space.
These are, yeah, these constraints.
Yes.
Yeah. But in fact, kind of a B is like the base of Hitchin system. What I'm telling you, it's exactly the base of Hitchin system. There are two wave functions. One wave function is the one which we discussed previously. It's a wave function which quantizes something which is defined by quadratic equation,
which
is infinite dimensional.
Yes.
All right. Then I can take the Hamiltonian reduction of it and quantize a finite dimensional Lagrangian subspace B, which is embedded in the first cohomology.
Okay.
Another example of this story, you take a compact three-dimensional collabial.
What is the relation?
One is obtained by Hamiltonian reduction from another one.
What does the reduction mean for this function?
Hmm?
Just means integrating.
I mean, you just, so you're.
It means integrating over G.
It's. You have an infinite dimensional vector subspace over which you factorize. Yeah? This one. So you have a wave function which depends.
Concretely, it's a function of infinite variables. What do I do to it to get a function of finite variables? I integrate somehow, right?
How to think. I don't know why integrate.
No, what do you do? You set the set some variables to zero.
Yes. If you like, yes. So then I do not understand because I do not see quasi-isomorphism.
Well, you
read
the chat description and what's
happening. No. Well, first of all, I think that the Czech is a little bit misleading. I believe that better to think in terms of adults. Okay, but if you think in terms of adults, I do not see kind of a change from one chart to another one. At every point I have some.
That's right. And you have two kinds of charts. One of the points and then the lower one, and then you have the intersection, which you have
to answer. Yeah, but. Okay, if you'd like, I understand what you mean, but okay. All right, but if you want to have a quasi-isomorphism, so you should really go to from non-compact Calabi-Yaus three-dimensional, which is this story, to the compact one, then you have very much similar story. Instead of the first cohomology, you have third cohomology. Your B becomes a Lagrangian cone. So yeah, you have this wave function, which is written exactly by the same story. Now the question is, where is the A restructure?
Yeah, it
looks mysterious. What I understand it's this quadratic Lagrangian. But now it will be graded. So if you'd like, I can tell you, but if you are totally exhausted, I can tell you during the lunch. All right. So anyway, so this is